welcome to Inside Education. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from our website insideed.com or from iTunes. On last week's programme, I spoke to Sheilani Aroin, a post-primary teacher who retired last year. Before that, Sheila taught for 33 years in Belcamp College and also in Pubblescull Nassauin Baldoyle Community School. On last week's programme, Sheila talked about working in Belcamp, the closure of the school, and about her views on teaching Irish. This week, she talks about discipline, suspending students and attendance. In this part of the conversation, I noted that one fear many beginning teachers have is in relation to managing behaviour and misbehaviour in post-primary schooling. I then asked Sheila, Cecily in English, how she dealt with behaviour matters in Belcamp.
Well, first of all, I think when you're new, it's a nightmare. And anyone, you know, people who don't teach say, aren't kids lovely, you know. And then in my dip, as I say, we had great support from Sister Maury, the principal. And I think I was lucky. I had two classes that were completely my own, where some people just helped a teacher sometimes, whereas I was in on day one. If they were swinging out of the light, it was my problem. So you began like everyone else. You want them to like you. A young teacher in my last school said to me the first week or two, she was saying, what about, you know, what do you do about this? And I was saying, do this, that and the other. And she said, but I don't want to be Hitler. And then by Halloween, she was saying to me, I'm being Hitler because I have to survive here. So I would recommend people read Maeve Martin, Dr. Maeve Martin of Maynooth, her study on discipline in schools done for the minister, Niamh Rannoch, in 1997. Very simple, very easy to read. You'd read it in an hour or two. If anyone from the outside world wants to know what it's like being a young teacher, read that book. You either get eaten for breakfast or you learn to control them. And not every class, some classes are easy, but you're always going to have some that are difficult. And you learn very fast that they're not going to be happy and they're not going to learn anything unless they listen to you. So I think the best bit of advice I got was from the principal. He's now gone to heaven, Father Matt O'Shea. He employed me in Belcamp. And he gave us one piece of advice. I say there were six of us new that year, and it was one sentence. You have to be more stubborn than they are. That's all he said to us. And I think if that's the only thing you told a young teacher, I was watching a programme recently with somebody who had a new baby, all about how do you get your baby to stay in bed. You know, when they're toddlers, they come out 10 times at night because they want company. And the nanny person was saying, you just have to wear them down and let them see you're not going to give in. Teaching is the same. So you first of all have to realise that for their good, you have to discipline them. And that discipline is the same. It's on a continuum with pastoral care. I was lucky that my first few summers, I was asked by people in the school to go on pastoral care courses in the summer down in Greendale and over in Carisford, and there was Douglas Hamlin from Swansea and Sister Una Collins, who was a Holy Faith sister, and they taught you an awful lot about your disciplining them because you love them and because you want them to do well. And the spin-off is that your head is helped. You're not disciplining them for you to have an easy life. So just really persistence. But I would always say to new teachers, you have to live through being a new teacher. No matter how good the people in the school are, they can't do it for you. But having said that, I think new teachers need an awful lot of help and they don't always get it. So I have very strong opinions on that. But I just learned the hard way by, you know, if you do that, I'll do this. And then you have to do it. You know, if you keep doing that when the bell goes, very sorry, we won't be going out to break. I'd love a break, but if you keep doing that, you know, and in the beginning they think, she won't keep me in because she'll want her break, or she won't bother talking to me at 4 o'clock because she'll want to go home. She won't really ring my mother. I learned very hard, very quickly to do what I said. And the other thing I learned was, and this is something I would always tell young teachers and wouldn't be commonly accepted sometimes, the parents are your greatest ally. They want exactly what you want. And I found, particularly in recent years, a lot of young teachers are terrified of parents. Parents are with you 99% of the time. So I began quite early on contacting people and ringing them up and saying, you know, I don't need to meet you at the moment, but if Johnny keeps doing X or Y, I would like to meet you with him. And we talk about what you're doing and what you're not doing. But, I mean, that's a very long story short. The number one thing is, go back to Father O'Shea, you have to be more stubborn than they are. And you learn very quickly that they don't like you if they're let do what they like in your class. And that if they know where the line is drawn, they feel kind of happier, really. And you can still have great fun with them. But Rome wasn't built in a day, and you can't have great fun with them immediately. You have to set down, you know, we used to be told when we began, don't smile till Christmas. And that was kind of a crude way of saying you must teach them where the line is before you can be their best friend and chat to them about everything. But I think it's very hard. And I remember another young pal of mine saying this was going out at this fella during college, and then she began teaching. She's doing her dip or whatever. And he was giving out jars. He was saying, why are you always tired and why are you always busy? And it was her first year full-time teaching. And I said to her, well, ask him, has he 200 people a day giving him guff in his job? You know, new teachers would tell you they go home and lie down on the sofa and they wake up at 9 o'clock. It's exhausting. But if you keep at it, like anything else, it really does pay dividends. You have to work terribly hard when you get a new class. And then it's very easy, really, once you do that at the beginning. With some classes, it could take you a year or two to the point where you love them and they love you. But if you just keep at it, it'll happen. And you're not going to win them all, you know. And if parents say to your kid, says to you, I'm not crazy about this, I'd say, sure, I wasn't crazy about all my teachers either, so don't worry about it. You know, don't take it personally, and just do your best to be as consistent as you can.
What about sanctions in terms of discipline and behaviour in school, like things like suspension or expulsion? Did you use them, and how what's your view on them?
Well, expulsion really didn't exist at all. I mean, in the early days, you'd hear so-and-so's expelled, and then you go in the morning and he was sitting in front of you, because really the oblates always wanted the best for the students, and I think they were right. I remember one time in recent years in Belcamp where there was a person expelled, and it was a very extreme case. And before he was expelled, the parents and the chairperson of the board and the form teacher and the principal and God knows who and his family and their legal representative spent a day in a hotel. And this was at the end of everything else that could have been done. And then the department upheld the school's opinion. And then he was a junior cert student. He got one-to-one teaching arranged in the local community centre, paid for by the department for all his subjects. Now, sometimes he didn't turn up, but the teacher was there anyway. So I think we've an extremely benign system here. The only thing is, I think in the 80s and 90s, a lot of us felt that the one troublesome student was getting all the attention. Mary Hanafin, whether you agree with her politically or not, because she had been a teacher, she listened when teachers' groups said, what about the majority? But anyway, I wouldn't be into expulsion at all. I think you should do a lot of things before that. But suspension, I think, was brought in when, I remember it. The theory was that the student would be in the bad books at home. And when you were suspended, you'd get an awful time at home and you might be kept in, you might be made study or you might be made do housework. The reality for 9 out of 10 kids is they stay in bed and watch telly and they come back and tell everyone how great it was. Very few. Now, you'd have parents, of course, who'd be say, I'll kill you. But their day could be quite nice during suspension. So we would have always begun when you were a year ahead. You would make sure, firstly, that you did everything except suspend them, because attendance would be the cornerstone of my whole approach. I think you can't educate anyone who isn't there. So you need the kids in every day. And if you get no message through to the parents, you know, parents would often say to you, I didn't go to secondary or I didn't do well at Gaeilge. What can I do? And I'd say, well, the number one thing you can do is try and get them in every day, because you can't achieve anything unless they're in. So then, like, at one stage, I had a boss. He's not in this country now. I hope he won't be listening. He used to suspend them from itching. And I always thought that was hilarious. That's like, if you're not wearing your uniform, then we'll give you a week of no uniform as a punishment. I used to think it was daft. But I think if they have to be suspended after loads of other things have happened, they should be getting work from several teachers. They should be presenting it in school the day before they come back. The teacher should be checking it. Give something that's easy to check, that isn't a punishment for the teacher. Not just the teacher who had the problem. A few subjects, if possible. Usually out of work ready, you know. And they wouldn't come back with that work done. And like everything else, they'd try it on, and once the word would get around, you won't be taken back without the work done. The parents make them do it. And being in school has to be the priority. And if being suspended is a holiday, or you like being suspended, it just has no effect at all. But we tried other things in Belcamp. We tried special group. And that was where a few of us volunteered, was part of my post to coordinate it. Six teachers volunteered, and we taught the kids who would have otherwise been suspended for 3 hours every day. We gave up our free classes. We met at lunchtime every Friday, and Ruby Morrow from the Department of Psychological Services usually met with us. She thought it was very, you know, innovative and worth a try. And we did it for a few years. And the idea was that they weren't having a holiday. They weren't allowed in school during the breaks of the other students, and they weren't allowed in school at any other time. They had to come in the morning, they had to wear the uniform, they had to be on time, they had to have their homework done. And unless they made a go of that, they didn't get back.
So they were taught separately from the other students?
Yeah. Now, you might only have four in it, because, as I say, the whole approach always in Belcamp, really, before student-centred became a buzz thing, that's what was done there anyway. But we tried it now, and then we did that with two principals, and then we got a new principal who didn't think it was a great idea, so we stopped doing it. Then another thing we had at one stage, my post was discipline committee, and I had been a year ahead for about 15 years before, and the then junior year ahead wanted someone or some people who would take care of the kids who were taking up all his time. He'd have people on daily report, and it'd be the same few people all the time, and he was getting nowhere. And then you were supposed to send them to the board, and he wanted something in between, and so did we. So instead of suspending them, they got referred to us. And as I say, it was part of my post, but the others were just my friends and the staff. It was the careers teacher, the chaplain, and other ordinary, you know, teachers of different things. And we just tried to do, say, Gaelge, English, maths, maybe business and geography, or whatever the group taught. It wasn't so much what you were teaching them as the fact that they had to be in every day. And they weren't allowed to mix with the others at breaks, and they had to have all their things done. But we tried it anyway, and we had a few successes. But the main thing was that they didn't think they were having a holiday. But the discipline committee, you met the parents at the beginning, and then they were in school every day, and they reported to me morning and afternoon at the morning break and after school. So they weren't missing any classes, and they hated that. And they were on daily report. And if it wasn't going well, we'd meet the parents again and we'd change it a bit or make it more strict or less strict. And the idea of that was to build up good habits. And we would give them, you know, we'd say your target for the next 2 weeks is to be on time every day. Or your target for the next 2 weeks is when a teacher tells you what to do, don't answer back till you've thought about it. You know, because they all had different things that were the problem. Nowadays, a huge one, the deputy in my last school was saying there last summer, is your phone. Like, does a young teacher say, give me that phone? Well, I'd always advise no. I'd just say to them, I don't want it, so please put it away. Because if I see it, I'll have to take it, and I don't want it. So then they put it away. But each student would have particular things, and the discipline committee would focus on that. And you'd try and reintroduce them then to normal school. But we tried loads of different things before we suspended.
So it was almost like as if the discipline committee was kind of a suspension within the school, if you like, that they were suspended, they were kept away from their peers in class and at break time. Is that right?
Two separate things. You had special group, which was the keeping them away and just bringing them in for a few hours a day. That was if they were extremely troublesome. But it was more in the noughties, as it's called, that we had discipline committee. And it was because the then system had been, if the year head can't solve their difficulties, their case goes to the board. And we wanted something before that. And sometimes the discipline committee worked that they were in ordinary school, but they were monitored very tightly. And it kept them away from the board, because the board could say to them, you're suspended indefinitely, or worse, that their case would have to go to the department. But it happened so rarely anyway. But
So the discipline committee then was kind of trying, would come up with sanctions, yeah, for students who the year head felt that they couldn't deal with.
Yeah, it was more that the year head had these revolving door people where he was blue in the face. He'd have, you know, one or two or three or four or five kids who took up all his time, and they weren't going to be solved by his couple of minutes a day, because he couldn't give them any more. His year had for 3 years at that stage, because the school was getting smaller. And it was to give them a chance to realise that this is getting serious. And we'd bring the parents in with them and just say, look, you know, surely you don't want this to go to the board, do you? And at that stage, parents, we never had anyone who didn't realise how serious that was. And, you know, it kept people from the ultimate step. Your aim should always be get them into school every single day of their lives and keep them there.
I want to come back to that in a minute, Cecily. The discipline committee, though, I just want to ask you, did you ever consider having students sit on the discipline committee?
Yeah, we did. We had two at one stage. It was hilarious because they were so, who were selected from among the seniors, they were so shy the first few weeks. They came in sitting with six teachers. We couldn't get them to say anything. But we didn't have a student council, we had at one stage, but it'd be a thing where I think you're right, maybe the students should have been a lot more involved in it, but they weren't. But we did try it at one stage. I think they were so overwhelmed by being in a room with a few of their teachers that they tended not to say much, really. You're better informally. See, the kids will talk to you all the time if you let them. And if you can get their opinions in an informal way, I think you're nearly as well off. You should always take their opinions into account. But sometimes we brought them in a few times to talk to the staff about things. And, I mean, again, people who would be very confident just talking in your classroom or on the corridor found it very hard. But I suppose if you had, you know, a well-run student committee or student council, you know, that was given a lot of training and that, it probably would be very good. And I think most of the bigger schools would have that now, you know.
You've mentioned a few times the importance of attendance.
Yeah.
Was that a problem in Belcamp, and what did you do about it?
Well, I think it's a problem everywhere. And the Education Welfare Board wouldn't have been set up if it hadn't been. And 9 times out of 10, the students who have problems are students who are not in much, or they've problems because they're not in much. And the first thing I would say really to younger teachers is, I would always have done it myself, not that I'm, you know, the icon or anything. If someone isn't in, ask them where they were. It takes 2 minutes at the beginning of every class. So where were you? Where were you? Where were you? Firstly, they love that you notice they're not in. And if you'd forget to do it someday, they say, did you not notice I wasn't in? So it makes it appear that you really cared that Johnny wasn't in, even if you're 29 other people. But secondly, you find out things that you need to know that you're not going to find out any other way. Whose granny has died? Whose father's living in England? You know, the best I ever got was a note, and I checked up and it was genuine. I'd leave the girl's name out. She would be in her 40s now, won't be in tomorrow because her uncles are getting out of Mountjoy and she has to have their dinner ready because I'm busy. And you learn so much from checking attendance that you will never learn any other way. And as I said earlier, if you get to know who's in your class and who's in your year, that's your number one job, because if you don't know what's happening, you can't help. So checking attendance gives you huge information that you mightn't get otherwise.
This probably is an advantage that primary schools have over post-primary.
Yes. Yeah, they're probably meeting. I know people I know who are primary teachers meet the parents in the yard nearly every day, or some guardian or somebody who's going to collect the student. And it's a brilliant thing to do, just have an informal chat. But firstly, checking attendance gives you information. And secondly, you can't educate someone who isn't there. So your number one job is to get them in. Now, the teacher must be in every day too. Because if you're going to stay at home if the wind blows, you can't really ask the kids why they weren't in. But in an unthreatening way, just all the time be dropping this little thing that being in is a huge thing and being in is really important. And it, say to parents, you know, parents would often say to you, I don't know any Gaeilge, I can't help with the homework. And I'd say, sure, don't worry about that at all. We get paid for that. If you could just get them in. So, and study after study would show that poor attendance will alert you to a problem at home. And also sometimes the poor attendance will cause lack of success in school. Because they're not, like, I would always have said to parents, say a student misses Tuesday. They've nearly missed Wednesday as well. Because Wednesday you might be going over Tuesday night's homework. They haven't a clue what you're on about. Sometimes the ones who would be missing, say, a day a week, that would be quite common. And the parents would say, sure, they're borrowing a copy from their friend. And I'd say, well, they've 9 classes a day. So if they've missed 2 days, they've 18 classes of copy stuff to write down. Not if you were to spend the rest of your life, are they ever going to do that? And also writing down from a copy is never the same as being in when the teacher's explaining the thing. Quite often, even parents who have gone to secondary, but definitely the ones who haven't, they don't know what they're missing. I remember Joe Duffy saying when he was well grown up, he drove past Trinity one day with his mother. And she said, Joe, what did you do in there all day? So she wouldn't have known if he missed any what he was missing. So you have to explain what they're missing if they miss school, how they can't just borrow a copy. They're not involved in quizzes, competitions, teams, friendships. If they're missing a lot of school, they're missing all that as well. So for me, it's the absolute cornerstone of your whole approach. Get them in. So suspension and expulsion, I would absolutely hate. But there would be the very, very rare time when, for the good of everybody, including the student, him or herself, they would have to be suspended. Expulsion, I really have only ever come across once.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
As part of your work and discipline, you've also experienced a buddy system. How did that work?
The buddy system was where, informally, we'd say, you know, I've 3Z next. Are you free, or who have you? Are you sixth year? Would you mind if I sent one or two over? You know, say if you were trying something very innovative, or if you knew there had been a big row about a particular thing, or somebody was in a class with someone else they couldn't stand and they were sparking off each other or whatever. You'd say beforehand, would you mind taking one or two if I need to ask you? And we used to do that for each other. Now, it might be once a month, but the big important, we always used to do that really for DIP students as well. We'd say, rather than, you know, the way sometimes if you're young, the kids cause a row for the crack to see what you're going to do. And if you can get rid of the main person and get on with your class, they learn very quickly that they're not going to derail your teaching. And it's not much fun, so they don't bother as much. But the essential thing is that the teacher who put the person out of the class must deal with them, and that the kids see you're not passing your problem on to someone else. You're just saying, sorry, so-and-so, at the moment we don't have time to listen to you because we're trying to teach this poem or whatever it is. Mr. and Ms. so-and-so will take you. They're expecting you. Here's the work to do. Or if you hadn't time even to do that, the other person would say, here, read that or whatever, and I'll see you at break, or I'll see you at lunch. Or now, you obviously couldn't overuse it, but just for the odd time when you need it, it worked very well for us.
And supposing a student, you asked a student to move and they said, no, I'm not going.
Oh, well, I mean, that's like you ask a student to anything and they say no. you have to go through your discipline procedure then. The first thing you'd need to do is talk to them after the class. If you're free, that's a dream. You send a note with the student, Mary will be late because I want to see her for a few minutes, that'd be grand. Or if you couldn't do that, you'd ask them to see you at 11 break. I used to always stay in my room for the small break. And if you're keeping someone, detaining someone, you must be there yourself. It's not okay to say, read that, I'm going off to have my tea. And again, if they see that you care enough about this to sit with them when you'd rather be somewhere else, they get the message fairly soon that this is going to keep happening. So you go through all your thing, giving extra work, a note in the journal, contacting home if that didn't work, keeping them in, whatever. And then you'd have to push it up the line if they're still saying no, which would be incident sheet. Now, usually when I would do an incident sheet, I'd have dealt with the thing myself anyway, but I just want this on the student's file. So I'd write at the bottom, as we were supposed to do anyway, I've given extra work for tomorrow, or I've rung Mr. Somebody and he's coming in to meet me tomorrow, but the incident sheet would be for the file. But the odd time, and particularly when you were young, you couldn't solve it yourself. So you'd have to, a tutor or a form teacher could help you quite informally. If it was a bigger thing, you'd have to go to the year head. Sometimes I think people are told when you've discipline problems, always come to us, the door is open. But young teachers are afraid if they admit they have problems, particularly nowadays. There's no such thing as a permanent teacher. They get a CID, which is a piece of paper, after 4 years. And I've heard several young teachers saying you wouldn't want to get the name of not being able to manage. They should be encouraged. I would rather to know what class is not behaving than to think everything's going great just because they're ashamed. It's very important that you don't see having discipline problems as in any way a reflection on you, and that you do ask for help if you need it, and that the help is there if you need it, and that it shouldn't be. I think sometimes young teachers think they will get the name of not being able to manage. And you'd hear sometimes, not often, luckily, older teachers, remember at a couple of discipline get-togethers, you'd have someone saying, I don't need all this discipline structure, I look after all my own problems. And you'd love to say to them, well, I would say to them, this is not about you. All the discipline structures are for the students so that they get on well. And it's not about you, and you should be helping everyone else. And you also should be admitting if someone's annoying you, because then a year head or a deputy principal or a principal can build up a picture, you know. Whereas if the young teachers are the only ones seen to be using a discipline structure, it's seen that they are the problem. And if a staff work together and it's seen as no shame to admit that you're not handling a class very well, it's good for everybody.
And that was Sheila Ní Aireann, who retired last year from post-primary teaching. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's Inside Education. If you have comments or suggestions, you can write to me by email to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Our website is insideed.com. Thanks to this week's guest, Sheila Ní Aireann. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.